Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're proud to be from Ohio. It's always been Ohio against the world.
Hey, Buckeye Nation. Joe Warwick here, your host of the Buckeye Cast. Check out the Buckeye Cast on your favorite podcast app. From the latest Ohio State news to in-depth recruiting updates, the Buckeye Cast has you covered every day. Find us on your favorite podcast platform. Subscribe now and get your Buckeye football fix with the Buckeye Cast. Go Bucks!
Welcome to the Growler, a Hootay podcast hosted by Paul Dana and other ball friends like Mo Egger, Dave Nanemes, home of all your Bengals breaks, takes. Welcome to the Growler.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of The Growler. It's Balds Don't Lie, Paul Dana Jr. of The Athletic here with you on a Monday. Got a fun show here for you. It's just myself here at first. Dave is on vacation, but don't worry, Mo will be joining me here momentarily. We've had kind of a, you know, the free agency ripple effects are still going. I want to talk through a little bit of that with you real quick, and then I want to bring you some of newest Bengal defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins, who met the media today, and elite performance as far as intro press conferences go. Funny, informative, interesting, likes to speak freely, as he noted about five times with us. And it was great. I think Bengals fans are going to really like Sheldon. I know I do, at least at the podium and in conversations with us. So that's going to be great. I'm going to bring you an extended cut of kind of a middle 12 minutes there of Sheldon Rankins from today's news conference, specifically talking about the three sack game that he had against the Bengals this past year with Houston, and some of the fallout from that and his view of how some of that went, could have been a six sack game, a bunch of other stuff there. What, you know, how he approached Zach Taylor talking about that. And then I, you know, a few questions that I was asking him specifically about the fact that, look, they have talked to Sheldon before. They've thought that he could be a Bengal a couple of times. He talks about that and what made this year different, which was money, a lot of money, significant amount of money. And other things, but money. And also a little bit about the potential of him having to assume some of DJ Reader's role in his view as, oh, this is a pass rush guy and not a run stop guy. And how different that is to what he could be asked to be do here compared to some of the things he did in Houston, and how he thinks that's maybe not as big of a problem as some people think it might be. So a lot of great stuff from Sheldon Rankins that I'm going to bring to you right before we talk to Mo. Going to talk with Mo a little bit more of general big picture stuff on what happened in free agency. Before I do that, just want to quickly touch on the state of what's out there. Hootay Light with Mark Chalifo on Friday discussed a little bit about Tart Becton, who were in for visits. They came, they went. As far as where that stands right now, I know everybody sort of is wondering what's next. It certainly sounds like that T.R. Tart is not going to happen. It looks like personality fit, some of the stuff that I mentioned in the story I wrote last week and talking about that on Friday, it just doesn't seem like it's a mesh here as far as the type of personality that they want to bring into that room, what they're looking for compared to other options and other paths they feel like they can still go down, that Tart's probably not a match for them. And so it looks like that's not going to happen there. So they'll look other ways, whether it's a few of the other players that are available, draft, creative options, all that stuff is kind of where they're at with the other defensive tackle. And you'll hear Sheldon Rankins a little bit about, look, he can be part of that answer too in his mind. And I think in their mind a little bit that it can work both ways there. And so that's why I wanted to make sure we bring all of what Sheldon had to say there. Mekhi Becton in the right tackle situation. Becton came, he went. And I don't think it's over there. I don't get the impression that it's totally closed. But it certainly sounds like they're looking at some of the other big names that are available. Emphasis on big. And so some of those names that are out there, you only got a few that have still started to keep an eye on, but I think they're more aggressively pursuing a few of the other former starters that have a little bit more experience that are out there right now. Not closing the door, but it does seem like weighing the other options pretty seriously right now about going a different direction. But still possible with Mekhi Becton, and we'll see how that plays out here. But they're working through that right now. So that's a little bit of update on where things stand there. I'm going to bring you here a little bit of Sheldon Rankins. And again, I spoke a little bit earlier on what you're going to hear from him, about 12 minutes of him here. And good stuff. And then after that, we'll move on with Mo and wrap it up. So here is Sheldon Rankins from his press conference Monday morning with Bengals Media.
You know, I think a lot of people will kind of look at my career and, you know, say I had some down years, but it's also just some years that, like, I've just been really beat up. You know, there were some years, you know, I suffered, you know, essentially I went through, you know, 2 Achilles surgeries in the span of, you know, a year, you know, and as hard as it is to get back from one of those, I had to get back from 2 of those, as well as get better in the process. Like, a lot of people don't understand how hard it is to come back from injury to get to the level you were at, but also still have to get better. So, you know, I just think, you know, being able to have good health over the last few years has really allowed me to just really attack my craft and really hone in on the things and, you know, that I feel like I need to do to get better, to really, you know, be the dominant player I know I can be. So, you know, for me, I feel like, you know, when I watched last year, like I had a really productive year, but, you know, there's still so much, you know, more left for me to do. And I feel like I'm still ascending as a player. You know, just overall, honestly, you know, I think, you know, I'm a guy who doesn't truly focus on, you know, all the things I've done well, like in a sense, you know, there are a lot of people that I always want to talk about, you know, not to open old wounds, but, you know, the 3 sack game I had against Cincy or different things like that. And, you know, when I watched that game, I only watched the sacks I missed, or I only watched the plays where I'm like, oh, if I would have done that, I would have, you know, been able to do something here. So, you know, for me, it's just about my continued growth and never feeling like, okay, cool, I've arrived, I've made it. You know, and part of my journey is, it'll never allow me to feel that way. So there's always going to be room for me to grow. There's always going to be room for me to grow as a run defender, whether it's leverage, whether it's, you know, use of my hands, or, you know, better strike or what have you, or even in my pass rush, you know, finding ways to, you know, beat slide protections and different things like that, or just finding more efficient ways to win my one-on-ones that, you know, a lot of one-on-ones I've had, they're great wins, but how can I turn those wins into sacks or sack fumbles instead of just pressures or hits and different things like that? So I'm always trying to figure out ways to continue to grow my game. And, you know, I feel like, again, you know, I'm still truly ascending, and I look forward to having a better year than I had last year. Let's do it. You want to do it? You brought it back up. But go ahead, yeah, for sure. I miss a few. Yeah, for sure. There was earlier, this is before I got my first sack, there was one where they said the protection to me. I'm going to rush on Ted, and I get bumped, and I just kind of slid off of one sack on Joe. I mean, Joe's a, you know, a tough sack. But so I slid off of that one. There was There was another one where Joe gained like 2 yards on the play, but that one should have been another sack. I got to find a way to get him down sooner. So the last sack I had on that drive, if you go back and watch the first play of that series, he's my teammate now, so I don't want to do this, but whatever, fine. We're discussing old wounds, guys. We're on to better things, but these are the questions asked, so I'm answering the questions. I beat Kappa with the stab club. So at this point, you know, again, he's my teammate now. We're good. I'm just answering the questions. After I've been kicking his ass all day, I was like, I'm setting up for like to win the game. I'm like, okay, cool. I know this move's gonna kill him. Sack ball out, game over. Like in my head, I'm literally walking through this because I just, it's gonna happen. So execute the move perfectly. And Jonah at the last second, so I beat Kappa. Jonah at the last second kind of comes back and like just pushes me enough. And like, and if you go back and watch that play, I beat him clean. And you see me like fall like this. You see my arm slap down like that. It's because in my mind, I'm going to strip the ball. Like it's happening. Like I'm going through my whole process, stab club, beat him clean, sack ball out. So I'm reaching for the ball, but I get bumped and Joe runs out, throws a ball, and Will Anderson, you know, chases him, gets a quarterback hit. So anyway, so that should have been like sack number 5 or whatever it should have been. But I go back and I watch. I spend most of my time watching all the ones I didn't make instead of the ones I made, because the ones I make, I truly expect myself to make those plays. So I'm always just trying to find ways to get better. It's never good enough for me. Like everybody, like, you know, everybody I know is super excited about the 3-sack game. And I was sitting on the plane or sitting on the bus thinking like, I really should have had 6 today. That's crazy. Like, and that's all I could think about. I couldn't be happy with the 3 because I knew there were some I still left out there. So for me, it's always about getting better. It's never about resting on what I've done. It's never about being satisfied with anything. And, you know, there's, you know, my family and stuff, they get, you know, pissed at me sometimes because they're like, you play good. Be happy about it. And I just can't. Like, that's just not the way I'm wired. Like, maybe when I'm done playing, I can sit back and, you know, smell the roses, so to speak. But, you know, for now, I got to keep going. There's more plays to make, and I got to make them. They didn't slide to me. I don't know why. That is the first question I asked Zach when I met him. Before I said any, hey, how you doing? Anything else? It was like, and again, excuse my French. I speak freely, guys. You're going to get used to it. I said, why the fuck didn't you slide to me? And we just kind of laughed about it. And, you know, he was like, you know what, man? You know, we probably should have. I'm like, well, I'm glad you didn't, you know? I even asked Ted, like, I think it was like midway through the game. I was like, y'all, this is the game plan. Cool. Not going to ask again. I'm not going to make y'all overthink it. That's what y'all want to do. Let's do it. You know, me and Cap have had some battles for years. He was in Tampa when I was in New Orleans. So, like, you know, just there's some familiarity there. So, I was very pleased with Coach Zach Taylor's decision to leave me one-on-one all day. It made for a great Sunday. Made for a great Sunday in Cincinnati, for sure.
You also had some other games too, I guess.
Absolutely. Last year, even the year before when I was with the Jets, I think I had like 8 tackles and a sack again. Yeah, I mean, so listen, I think even the year before I had the game winning sack again. You know, listen, I'm kind of a football junkie. You know, my memory's got a pretty good memory. I mean, even 2018, I had a sack against Clint Bowling. I mean, listen, there's, you know, Andy Dalton was at quarterback. I mean, listen, you know, Houdet has been kind to me, whether they've meant to be or not, they've been really kind to me. So I appreciate it. And now they're kind to me now, so I appreciate it.
This isn't the first offseason they pursued you.
previous years where you thought you might end up here at any point?
Yeah, when I went to the Jets, I thought it might have been here. You know, obviously we just couldn't get it to work out. But, yeah, no, I mean, this isn't the first time they pick up the phone and requested my services. And, you know, this time it was able to work out. So, you know, their persistence paid off. You know, it's like the, you know, the girl, you know, like, hey, I'm going to just be your friend for now. And then, you know, maybe one day she'll like look at me like, you know what, he's kind of cute. You know, and, you know, they were persistent. And, you know what, let's give this a shot. And here we are.
I mean, I think there was maybe a thought that you would be back in Houston. Were you surprised at how aggressive the Bengals ended up being, continuing to come after you this year?
Yeah. Yeah, honestly. You know, I think, you know, as a true fan of the game, I thought, you know, truthfully, one, I honestly just thought, I thought DJ would be back, you know, I'm just speaking honestly. I thought DJ would be back. I mean, he's been a hell of a player here. So, you know, in my mind, as a person who, again, watches D-line play, I'm like, oh, they don't need me. Like, it just made sense. So, you know, once they, you know, again, you know, made their approach and, you know, it pretty much went there. It went really fast. You know, once they reached out and, you know, and were adamant about, you know, what they saw me as in this defense and what I could bring, and it all made sense. You know, it all made sense. And, you know, I'm glad to be here, and I'm you know, hoping, you know, with the way I work and the way I go about my business, I can be everything they, you know, they envision me being here.
Was there something on that note? I'm sorry. On that note, I mean, what can you be here? I mean, how much of DJ's role can you assume? I mean, people think of you probably, like you said, more of a pass rusher.
Right.
DJ's role, do you feel like you could assume if you needed to?
Right. Listen, I think I can do everything at a high level. You know, if you go back, you know, to my last year with the Jets, coming off of that year, people questioned, could I rush the passer anymore? Everybody was like, oh, he's a run guy now. Like, that's what he is. He's a run guy. Like, you go back, and I mean, with, you know, the Jets, my last year there, when I was on the field, we gave up 3.8 yards a carry. And, you know, going to Houston, we became the, you know, number six run defense in the league or something like that, you know, with me playing a lot of snaps, you know, of run defense. So, you know, I think I do it all at a high level. You know, I think you don't get this far in the league, or you don't, you know, get the opportunities I've had to be a guy. And again, like, the Jets didn't have to play me on first, second down. They could have went out and got a big body and, you know, did all that. But, you know, I feel like it's, you know, I play football really well. I don't just rush the passer really well. Like, I play, you want to line up in 21 personnel, run power, cool, it's fine, let's do it. If you want to spread it out and throw the ball over the park, just don't leave me by myself all day. It's going to get ugly. So, like, you know, I feel like I do it all really well at a high level. So, you know, I look forward to continuing that trend, you know, and continue to do that the rest of my career.
Was there something specifically about negotiations this time?
Was
that, I know money's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I'm gonna just say it made sense this time. Let's just leave it at that. Look, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, to just speak honestly, like most people assumed I wouldn't leave Houston. That everybody assumed, you know, with the year I had and, you know, everything, you know, Houston had coming back, everybody assumed I would be back there. And, you know, for whatever reasons, it didn't work out. So, you know, once I started, you know, looking elsewhere and having those conversations, nothing made more sense than here. You know, whether it's money, whether it's fit, whether it's everything culminating into placing myself in a good situation on a good football team with, you know, with the right people leading it. It all made sense. You know, this was the perfect spot for me right now in my career. And, you know, that's why I'm here.
All right. There's Sheldon again. You hear him talk outside of some of the funny stuff and you know, that stuff's great. But I think him pointing out, hey, look, when I've been asked to stop the run, I stop the run. I'm part of teams that have stopped the run. So, you know, and I thought really interesting when he was talking about, hey, there was a time when people thought I couldn't rush the passer. I was just a run stop guy. And now I'm the opposite. And that's why he views himself as a guy who can do both. He's not as big as DJ Reader. Okay. He's not going to bring you that level of run stop. But in a pass heavy league, can he bring you enough that, man, when he's out there and you have him and BJ Hill next to each other, you can really get after the passer when they're not trying to run at you. There's a couple of sides. They still need more. They still need run stop. They still have to find somebody who specializes in that. Somewhere between DJ Reader and Josh Tupo, right? Like that exists. And a draft pick in there to make you feel better. But I think the fact that you can get some of that from Sheldon, and he does sound willing to give you that, gives you a little bit of sense of what a solution can look like there. And it doesn't have to be. Not every team is going to have two gapping run stuff and crap talking DJ Reader in the middle. It's just there's only so many of those guys. So he can be part of a creative solution there. Liked all that stuff, of course. Loved all the stuff talking about Kappa and what went down in that game and the reaction to people. But look, you're gonna leave him one-on-one. That's what it can look like, and he's proven that over the years, and especially against the Bengals. Clint Bowling caught a stray, and so good stuff from Sheldon. Looking forward to a year with him. All right, on that note, let's flip things forward and let's get to our segment with Mo Egger. All right, now let's bring in our good friend and yours, Mo Egger of ESPN 1530. Mo, how we doing? Happy Monday. Happy tournament week to you.
What's up? What's going on?
I mean, there's excitement in the air.
Yes.
I know that the local teams are not participating in the big dance. They have, mm-hmm. A little dance.
Mm-hmm.
That they're doing, but still, tournament starts Thursday. Let's go. Feeling good.
Dayton Flyers tip off 4:30 on Thursday, so I've got that for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they're UC and Xavier are both playing. You know, if your favorite team is playing a game, you want them to score more points than the other team. And so
yeah,
I hope the Bearcats can make a run. I like watching them play. So I hope they keep winning, or I hope they start winning on Wednesday. Is that what it is? Wednesday, and then can make a run to Hinkle Fieldhouse.
I thought about doing a trophy. Let's do a bracket of the Bengals free agent signings, and it felt like it would be even for me a little too much and a little repetitive. So throwing that to the side. By the way, are you doing any shows in studio? Like, you're all over the place this week. You're at Holy Grail on Thursday. At Turfway. We're gonna go to Turfway Park tomorrow.
We are Turfway Park Racing and Gaming. We'll do our hour live together. I'm in studio Wednesday, and then I broadcast from Turfway Tuesday, in studio Wednesday, and then my favorite show of the year Thursday morning before the games tip off, 10 to noon. And then we hang out and watch games all day. You talked about the bracket trope. That is my favorite sports talk radio trope. And I feel like it has sort of, it's been cast aside, because now March is so busy with NFL free agency that sports talk radio hosts don't have time to do, like, you know, their 64 favorite candy bars, or, you know, some shows it would be 65 hottest news babes, stuff like that. I feel like those things have become a thing of the past. And there's a part of me that's saddened by it.
My favorite one of those, when everyone was doing them, someone did a brackets of the brackets, like which was the best trophy bracket of all of them. And I thought that was when we'd officially hit, okay, we've tied a bow on this entire thing. I do want to ask you about free agency though. Okay. So I'll just, rather than going into a bracket simulation, I'll just say this. Someone asks you on the street, Mo Egger, ESPN 1530. What did you think of the Bengals free agency? What's the first thing you say?
Fine, yeah. But questions, right? You wrote about DJ Reader, and I think that's the great question of free agency. Did the Bengals get it right with DJ Reader? I wanted him back, but I can certainly understand why the team that employed him while he suffered an injury would balk at bringing him back and bringing him back at a certain cost. I am fascinated by how this is going to play out with DJ and with a position that was a weakness last year. And even though Sheldon Rankins looked like Geno Atkins 2.0 when he played against the Bengals this past November, I still wonder what that position is going to look like moving forward. And so there wasn't a player that they've brought in that I didn't think, God, that could work. But I'm still wondering who the starting right tackle is going to be. And I'm still wondering, is defensive tackle going to go from a weakness to a strength? I think there's so much gray. It's not black and white. It's not pass fail. I think in certain areas, the Bengals have done some things that I really, really like, and I'm really intrigued by. And then they've done some things, or maybe not done some things, that make me wonder, okay, is that position really going to be significantly better once the game start in September?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a blast from the past, kind of, in that, you know, there wasn't a splashy moment or a splashy signing or something that made you think, oh, new Bengals, right? This was kind of a little bit more of the, I wouldn't use the word conservative necessarily, but calculated, low-key, under-the-radar type of free agency, where a lot of their picks are like, oh, that could be a really good low-key signing when we look back on it. And that's a way that they more used to approach free agency. And I mm-hmm. think they did here, whether you're talking about Geno Stone or you're talking about Zach Moss, I mean, or even Gesicki, I think you can look at any of those and say, man, those could really end up looking really smart in the fall and great bargains. Whereas so many of the deals that are done across the league last week that are splashier, you say, boy, they could really end up regretting that in the fall, just because if it doesn't work out, it really hurts you. If these don't work out, yeah, it would hurt them, but these weren't massive bargaining chips that they put out on the table.
Yeah, and you talk about a splash. I mean, the biggest wow for me in this entire process was how the Joe Mixon thing ended. The greatest divorce ever, right? All parties got what they wanted. I mean, it's remarkable. The Bengals got, you know, a player that fits the profile of what I think they were looking for at running back, younger, cheaper, and more explosive. Joe Mixon gets to go to a team that has a chance to be really good, and he gets paid. Like, I think it's remarkable in this day and age where, you know, we've talked so much about the value of running backs. Here's a guy going into his eighth season who is a good player, but not considered among the elite, that just got $13 million from the Houston Texans, guaranteed, on top of whatever else he may earn. It just, it goes to show that not everybody's evaluation is the same. And it goes to show that, not that Joe Mixon is trash, one man's trash is another man's treasure. That to me, I know you and I have talked about Joe Mixon a ton. How that ended is remarkable, and it's remarkable that it worked out for all parties involved. That was the biggest wow moment of the week for me, on top of, you know, just other stuff that happened around the league. That is fascinating. But yeah, I mean, look, I said months ago, and I think I said this to you, regardless of how the next couple of offseason cycles play out, free agency cycle and the draft cycle, I'm going to emerge from this going, the Bengals have a chance to win the Super Bowl. I felt that way a month ago. I feel that way today. And it's because Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins are, as of right now, at least, still together. So that's the big macro thing for me has been, is Joe Burrow going to be healthy going into week one? Can he stay healthy? Can that trio of players play for the overwhelming majority of 17 games? And if the answer is yes, this team's going to be okay. There was likely going to be nothing that happened in free agency, either additions or subtractions, that made me feel different about that. Now, you know, specifically what they've done on offense, you and I talked about this last week. Mike Gesicki brings a level of tight end of explosiveness that we, I guess, really haven't seen. Zach Moss fits exactly what they're looking for. It's the theme of the offseason, explosiveness. And I love Geno Stone because I love players that the more you ask them to do, the better they do. And that certainly seems to be a fitting description of his time in Baltimore. But sure, I mean, some of the biggest questions going into the offseason were at defensive tackle and right tackle. I also think the Dax Hill dynamic is fascinating. Because, boy, they've made a pretty bold statement at safety, right? With Von Bell coming back and Geno Stone. And so it's a statement that, at least for me, the athletic profile of Dax Hill is awesome, but he's got a 2-cent head. Like, we value communication and we value intelligence and we value guys being in the right place. And so these are the sort of players we're going to bring into play safety. And Jordan Battle was a better rookie than Dax Hill was a second year player last year. So by September, what role does Dax have on this team? Does Dax have a role on this team? What does that look like as the season evolves? I think he becomes really kind of the most intriguing individual player that comes back, because a year ago at this time, we were talking about him replacing a Pro Bowl safety. And now he might move to corner. He, you know, maybe you can make the argument that they should find a team that'll trade for him. I don't know, but his role on the team and where he fits in is really going to be interesting to kind of pay attention to.
We play this game every year when the players first return of, you know, if you're a player, the last thing you want is to see me and James and Kelsey and the others standing at your locker. It means something has happened with your role and people are wondering how you feel about it. Dax will be that guy. I'm really curious his reaction. Look, Dax was notably frustrated as a rookie with not playing, with having to learn a bunch of different positions in the background, being a first round pick, feeling like you should come in and contribute, and just not thrilled with that. And then last year he got his opportunity and it didn't go super. And I wonder how his reaction will be to this offseason, which has been pushed to the background again. Doesn't have a starting spot. And how does he approach that? Is that going to put him in the tank? Is that going to make him jump head first into, I got to be better to learn a new position? Would he feel refreshed moving to a new position? Like, he's in a better spot. Would he ask for a trade? Would he, like, we don't know how Dax is reacting specifically to all of this. And I think I'm really curious to see what that's going to be, to know what you've got in him and how you should then proceed with the rest of free agency in the draft in the defensive backroom. Because if he can come in and be a motivated, willing piece as a slot, corner, backup, whatever, could move back to safety if things go sideways, like, that's valuable to me, even if you have your questions about it. And he obviously can be your starting slot next year if he takes to it, if Mike Hilton leaves. But I really want to have a better feel for his thoughts and feelings and approach to another time feeling like this team is not valuing him in his eyes, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I credit the Bengals, because I feel like there are moments in franchise history where their approach at safety would have been shrug your shoulders and just hope the two guys they had back there, mainly Dax, just get better by osmosis. Like, I feel like, and I say this with no real examples, maybe you have one and maybe I'm off base, but I feel like there are times where they would have said, look, we drafted Dax Hill with a first round pick. Like, that's our guy. So we're not going to be aggressive at this position. I like the fact they took the opposite approach. Look, his play wasn't good enough last year. There may be a role now moving forward where his play is more than sufficient, or maybe this is a wake up call for him and he shows up and he's a better player. Or maybe in a year or two, we look back at how Von Bell came back and Geno Stone came back or came to Cincinnati, and those guys helped Dax Hill put together the sort of season that he needed to put together at safety or wherever. I don't know, but I know in the short term, they looked at that and said, Dax Hill's not good enough. And yeah, man, we used a first round pick on him and we brought him along his rookie year in a way that was maybe going to allow him to flourish as a versatile guy, but his play at this position wasn't good enough. And so we're moving on. We're moving on, and we'll see how this plays out long term. But sorry, we can't sit around and simply hope that Dax Hill just gets better because he's a year older. I like that. I also think the discourse around the possibilities at right tackle were interesting. So Mekhi Becton comes in for a visit. And there was a lot about his season last year with the Jets to not like, right? Pro Football Focus grade was miserable, penalties, sacks given up. It wasn't good. And then there's this panic that sets in, OMG, is this the kind of guy they're going to sign? Well, if we all agree they were saying goodbye to Jonah Williams and we all agreed they had to go get a right tackle, guess what? Chances are that player wasn't going to be as good as Jonah Williams. The profile of that player was going to fit more of a guy like Mekhi Becton than Jonah, who obviously goes and gets his money with the Arizona Cardinals. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how we react to what they do with that position. I'm certainly hopeful that in this, you know, tremendous class of tackles that the guy starting week one is good enough to play as a rookie in the first game of the season. But if you were looking at free agency, kind of turning up your nose at some of the other right tackle options, well, those guys probably aren't as good as Jonah Williams. And so a guy like Mekhi Becton or someone similar is what you're going to get. And I thought we all understood that when we agreed Bengals are probably going to move on from Jonah Williams and we're okay with it.
Yeah. Because I mean, you would hope to have somebody that you have even more confidence in, not than Jonah, but you know, where it's think Riley Reiff, right? I mean, yeah. I look at it in that way. I mean, where somebody where you're like,
I didn't want to think about him anymore, but thank you.
No, but when they signed Riley Reiff, it was like, mm-hmm. okay, a dude who's done it. He should replace Reiff on his back with serviceable, right? Like that's mm-hmm. what it should say. That's what you want. You want solid, not a total liability, serviceable right tackle in case the rookie kid needs more time. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's still there. I think Becton could be that. I think other names that are out there can be that. And so I don't necessarily look at that at all as a problem or not having gone to plan yet. I do think that them not taking the more aggressive route, whether it was somebody like Jonah or anybody that you or going after a right tackle, which I think that would be a stretch to think that they would have spent a ton of money on right tackle. If you look at all at their history of what they've said of, we'll pretty much put whoever in there at right tackle has kind of been their attitude over the last however many years, that it's all still there in front of you. And if if you're really getting somebody who is in any other year, a 10th overall pick at tackle, like, and putting him in there and not having to do it even week one, you're in a pretty good spot for win. This team wants to be playing in January, right? Where mm-hmm. that right tackle rookie should be pretty damn good by that point. You should have a decent feel for how they're going to be. Not saying that they'll be perfect, but that's the chance of them to really kind of start to blossom and understand the league. And I think you're in a good spot in that regard to handle whatever goes on. And so I don't look at it as a big problem. I think that they're still in a pretty good place there.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's also like they have to start nailing draft picks on the offensive line, right? I mean, you know, they get credit for being aggressive on the offensive line and basically blowing up that 2021 unit and doing it with free agents, each one to different degrees of success. And then Orlando Brown, the following offseason. But, you know, what's that line going to look like in a couple of years if the well is totally dry in regards to players on the offensive line they draft and develop? Because, you know, we have these conversations about what they're going to do with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. Well, they're probably not going to be able to, not that they spent lavishly, so to speak, with the guys they signed on the offensive line, but they were still expensive players relative to what you're getting if you have guys in their rookie contract. So what's the offensive line? If you really want to talk long-term, what's the O-line going to look like when, you know, it's time to move on from Kappa and Karras and Orlando Brown? And not that anybody's looking to move on from any of those players now, but if you want to talk long-term, boy, at some point, they've got to start nailing it on the offensive line. Maybe they did with Cordell Volson. I don't know, but they didn't with Jackson Carmen. And then you could go back a number of years and look at the guys they didn't nail it with. Like they've got to start getting it right on the offensive line. So that entire like years long process can start with the draft this year. And you go, okay, right tackle. This is the guy around which everything's going to evolve on the offensive line moving forward. Because as much as I can appreciate them being willing to spend to get rid of that trash can offensive line in 2021, signing three or four offensive linemen in an offseason is not ideal. At some point, you've got to start nailing it on the offensive line. And so that right tackle, I view as a very, if, assuming they take one, I think that's a fair assumption. That's a guy that we have to be talking about, not only by the end of this season, like if he's playing, he's playing well, but okay, there's right tackle, check that box. Now we've got to start to think about what the O-line is going to look like in the second half of the decade. And not that you can't sign free agents, but I don't know that they really can do what they tried to do two off seasons ago. I don't know that the O-line can constantly be this churn of free agents you're bringing in from elsewhere, especially when you get to the real money years of Joe Burrow's deal and what Jamar Chase is going to be getting. And so I kind of view the offensive lineman they take this year as the guy that's going to set in motion, hopefully, a series of years where they start to get it right with young offensive linemen in the draft.
I love that they have been willing to pay, right? Like we've talked about that. I love that they've been willing to do that and maybe even self-scouted their own issues there or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, you are not going to win a Super Bowl, or your ability to win a Super Bowl is going to be defined by not just your draft picks, but your offensive draft picks, and specifically your offensive line draft picks. They cannot survive another run like the last 10 years, essentially, of missing on almost all of these guys. You know, I don't have a problem with what they got out of Jonah Williams. I don't think they necessarily missed on that pick. I don't, you know, that you look at that class, it wasn't that bad, but
yeah,
that's fine. But you got to get at least that. But that's using a top pick. You can't consistently not get anything from the back of the draft. Like maybe Jonah and Cordell, giving them a few more hits is a sign of them figuring it out a little bit better. You know, we heard some of the coaches talk last time about how they're, look, they feel like they've learned from some of their more recent mistakes of making sure they're focusing on the guys who are going to be about the right stuff, doing the right things, and not getting tantalized by traits all the time. Hmm. And focusing more on that. And maybe they have, but it has to happen now. Like you can't have that miss again. And if you look at it, and I know I hear a ton of Bengals fans come at me with the, look, they are not drafting enough athletes and sending me the relative athletic score graph that we've all seen of they have all these dudes that are sloppy and slow and whatever. Fine. I mean, they're going to have bigger, more powerful guys because that's something that Joe Burrow wants. Mm-hmm. But maybe they need to do a better analysis on what exactly that means in the guys that they've taken and learning from that. But you can't. You certainly can't miss here if you're going to take it at 18, because that guy has to play and you're going to have to learn the hard way and you're going to go down Obwehi Lane again. And nobody wants to do that, because if you draft a guy in the first round, he's got to play. And he's going to play for multiple years and he is going to be charged with protecting Joe Burrow. And we know what that means right now and how quickly that can send a season sideways. And so you just can't be missing if you're going to be going that route, and you need to go that route. And they are. There's so much pressure on them to understand that position better and start getting it right more consistently right now, specifically starting with this first pick. You're right on. It's going to be massive.
Yeah, it's a huge pick for this year. It's also a huge pick. Look, the second half of this decade, the dynamic of building a roster is just going to be different. You know, as much as you want to say, well, the cap doesn't exist, I know that's a big popular meme on Twitter. Roster building in the second half of the decade, the next phase of Joe Burrow's time as a Bengal is going to be significantly different. And you know, again, nothing against what they did post 2021 on the offensive line, but at some point, man, You've got to have homegrown guys that you develop that are working as on rookie contracts, and you're getting a lot out of them. I think they got it right with Jonah Williams. Did he ever play to the level of the 11th overall pick? Maybe not, but he was a good player for this team, and he was the only offensive lineman they wanted to keep post 2021. And there's some value in that. But yeah, I view the offensive lineman they take, if we assume that's what they're doing with the 18th pick, that right tackle, they've got to nail it. They've got to nail it for right now, for 2024. But that's got to be a really foundational piece moving forward. And so I'm really interested in how that plays out. And in the interim, you know, serviceable right tackle, when we all decided that Jonah Williams is gone, okay, that's what they were signing up for, was serviceable. They weren't signing up for high end. They weren't signing up for a guy just coming off playing in the Pro Bowl. They were coming off going from Jonah to serviceable to bridge the gap between Jonah and what's next. What's next has to be really good.
Yeah. I want to switch gears real quick to, so I was out at the Ted Karras event on Sunday, St. Taddy's Day, which Ted is just a legend. Like, it is unbelievable what he has done to, like, get people to rally together. Like, we can't get our country to agree on anything, right? Anything. But everybody's like, but Ted Karras is great.
Yeah.
And we're all, there were thousands of people at the Foaling Warehouse. Okay. I mean, every major sponsor in the city was there. People are just, everyone's just getting inked up to say, I came to Ted Karras's event for life, permanent on your arm, saying Ted Karras's Cincy hat logo on me for life. I'm in. It's fascinating. And he's just like raising money, and he's
awesome.
Hooked up with Ken Anderson. And I just, like, this dude is an absolute legend. My question to you is there in your history a sports person, moment, logo that you would get a tattoo of for life on you? Are you, I'm tattoo free. Are you tattoo free?
I am 1,000% tattoo free. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And oh, and shout out, by the way, Joe Burrow donating $25,000 to Ted Karras's foundation, to all of that, Village of Marici, just because, basically for challenging. Ted's like, look, yeah, we were at the free agent dinner, and it's me and it's Geno Stone, and we're hanging out there. We're all of us there. And it wasn't necessarily that he said, I'll give $25,000 if you get the tattoo, because Ted wasn't going to do it because his wife doesn't want him to. He's like, it was kind of the challenge of Burrow being like, you got to do it. I'm going to give the money. And like, I feel like if Burrow came up to me and said, I'd give you $25,000, I don't really honestly care what the logo is. Like,
I'll do whatever. I'll
probably. I mean, it's going to the human fund, money for people, right? I'm doing it for me. I'm not giving it to my charity necessarily, although I'd love to if I have a good one. But I'm getting it. So I'm not. So Ted gets it. Would you? What would you get? What would you get? Maybe even for free.
Well, first of all, on the Ted Karras thing, this has been really fun to watch because Ted's a good player, but not like a national household name, right? Like Joe Burrow is. So for this guy to come in as a free agent and in a very organic way, get people talking about the Village of Marici and what he's trying to accomplish just through the sales of hats. It's awesome. Like it's a component of what sports are supposed to be about at this level. And it's just, it's fun. The Bengals coming off a disappointing season and yet still rallying around Ted being the Bengals Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee and winning the online challenge. And it's really neat to watch, man. I mean, in a day and age where we're so jaded and skeptical about pretty much anything that might be good, here's legitimate good. And so it's a credit to Ted. It's a credit, and it's really neat. It's really neat to watch. And again, nothing against Ted. He's been a solid NFL player for years, but it's one thing when it happens around a guy who's got a huge national profile or a dude with just this overwhelming effervescent personality. You know, here you have a relatively unassuming guy. You certainly know him better than most, that just in a very organic way got people talking about something good and got people involved and mobilized. And I think it's awesome. I really do think it's cool in terms of a tattoo. Now, I'm not a tat guy. Like dudes built like me don't get tattoos.
It doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't. My friend Rich Wahlberg and I in 2000, Kenyon Martin's senior year, UC was the number one team in the country. We said, this is going back now almost a quarter of a century, if the Bearcats win the national title, we're getting C. Paul tattoos. Obviously, it didn't happen that year. But Rich passed away about 2 years ago, a little bit more than 2 years ago. I still feel like if it ever did happen, And granted, NIT doesn't count, okay?
No, you would not get the NIT, a CPAW with an NIT logo on you if they win the NIT this year.
No. It was
national. What about one of those temporary ones that lasts like 3 to 4 weeks?
Fine. That my daughter gets? Yes. I'll do that. But we made that vow. Now, at the time, I was 22 years old, right? 22, 23. I was 22 years old. And so now I'm not 22 anymore. Here we are 24 years later. I believe that I still would have to do that if UC won the national championship. Where I don't know. But I think I would have to do that. I think I would have to do that. A, to honor Rich's memory. B, it is a vow I made 24 years ago. And so if that ever does happen, now he and I, and it was right before he passed, UC football made the college football playoff. And we did discuss, well, if football wins the national title, are we going tattoo? And I said, yes.
Yeah.
So I guess I would have to apply it to the Bearcats, but then one might say, well, wait a minute. What if the Bengals win one? I don't know. But one time, a long time ago, I did make a vow. If the Bearcats ever won a national title, I would get a tattoo. And I think there were going to be like calf tat. Like it was going to be, I would walk around the rest of my life with a UC, St. Paul, my cat. I don't know. Right. I don't think we ever really vowed a specific place on our bodies. Again, dudes built like me, like you put it on your arm. You know, if you're built like an NFL offensive lineman, a tattoo looks cool on your arm. If you're like me, no. So then where do you go? Like, what? I don't know. This is why I've never gotten a tattoo.
Ted went hip. And I think hip's not bad because basically no one's going to see that.
Right.
But and so if you're trying for no one to see it, then I guess that's where you go. But I don't mind somewhere where, like, if I'm in a non-work environment, you can see it. If I'm swing, like, but again, I'm not looking good. I don't want to draw any more attention to my body than I already am, you know, by not having a shirt on while I'm swimming or whatever. But I do. Here's my thought. You remember how everybody would make fun of AJ McCarron for the big tat that he, the like wings across his chest that he had. It was a whole thing. Here's what I think maybe you should consider, or not, maybe I would consider, is that as a formative thing. Instead of like Eagles wings going all across my chest, wire to wire,
all the
way across, right? Or like down here, like Tupac had Thug Life, it just says wire to wire on it. Maybe like smaller underneath it says like where's Quinones. Underneath it a little bit, or let's go Riho on the other side, you know, from the wire to wire video. I feel like that's the move.
I knocked down my camera.
So good at knocking the camera over. I think that's the move. I think that's what we should look back on. If the Reds ever win again, we go back and we do wire to wire.
Okay, done. For those who don't understand the reference, the 1990 World Series VHS video, which came out months after the Reds won the World Series, it is, aside from the movie Clerks, it is probably the VHS or DVD I have watched the most. So much, it's on YouTube. I can, as that thing, if we put it on right now, as that thing is playing, I could step right in and narrate the thing along with Pat O'Brien. I can drop the where's Quinones right when the Rosie Reds are up there screaming it. And then I could recite Lou Piniella when they flash to him and he's explaining specifically where Quinones is. That is the thing that I could recite line for line. It is an iconic piece of early 90s. Cincinnati and frankly Americana culture. So go watch it. It's wire to wire. It is you got Jose Rios' ex-wife referring to him by his last name.
Yes.
You've got Ricky Henderson at his locker after they lose game three. You got the whole saga with Tom Browning leaving the stadium in game two that they narrate as he's there for his baby being born during the game. You got the Rosie Reds. It is I'm going to now go spend my Monday night watching as we wait for the NCAA tournament to begin. This is going to happen.
Yeah, I think I'm back. I think I'm back. It really should be a thing every year, actually, that we watch like the Wednesday night before opening day. Go back, watch Wire to Wire, because what do you do the next day on opening day if they win? Wire to Wire.
Wire to Wire.
Everybody says it. You talk about Wire to Wire on opening day every single year. I guarantee you we will do it again when we meet up in right field, as I assume that we will on opening day. And yes. Wire to Wire will be mentioned. We'll quote a lot of these same things. I look forward to it. I feel like it should be a thing every year on that Wednesday. That we get it, and then in that way, when they do win, we get the tattoo. That's my thought.
But, I'm in. Yeah.
Oh, all right, okay. Mo.
I don't know that I'm going full like AJ. I mean, I don't. My wife, I don't. She'd probably laugh at it. I don't know.
It doesn't have to be full McCarron style. We could think of a better spot for it to be, but I feel like it's got potential. That's all I'm saying.
List of people that I've always wanted to interview is Pat O'Brien. Who's had this remarkable career of
what a wild ride.
Wild ride. I mean, you know, professionally, it was sort of like in the 80s and 90s, like the studio host of everything that I grew up watching. But then if you ever Google like Pat O'Brien voicemails, interesting stuff there, has kind of had an interesting off-camera life. But I just want to talk to him about narrating that video.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like he's like, all right, I'll do it. One take. Let's go.
One take.
Yeah. He was not spending 2 days in a booth reading the Wire-to-Wire script. It was fine. I'll give you an hour. Let's go. Let's read it. It is as casually done as you could imagine. And it's terrific.
It's what makes it perfect. All right, Mo. I appreciate it. Good luck with the hot wings. I'm sure that it will be excellent. And I look forward to seeing you at the old racetrack at Turfway tomorrow. Yes. That'll be a nice change
Turfway
up for
Park
us.
Racing and Gaming. It's going to be unbelievable.
Let's go. Thanks, Mo. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you.
Okay, great. As always, to catch up with Mo and, you know, looking forward to the big tattoos. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be all about tattoos. Seriously, Ted Karras' event was crazy. And kudos to everybody that showed up and got tattoos of the Cincy Hat logo and all of that stuff. Everything goes for sale. People supporting. Great stuff. Great stuff out there. Ted getting it done as always. All right. That will wrap up our show. Thanks everybody for listening. Be back on Wednesday with Jay. And we will talk through all things going on with the Bengals and free agency and looking ahead to the draft. I'll ask Jay the question I asked Mo. I wonder what kind of tat he would get. I'm curious what he has to say. So make sure you guys are listening tomorrow, ESPN 1530 from 3 to 4, myself and Mo there. And then Wednesday, we'll have, of course, Edie and Jay. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.